Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast, hosted by Renita Ray Davis, licensed clinical social worker, board-approved social work clinical supervisor, and facilitator of the Goddesses of Social Work supervision community. Join us as we travel through the social work journeys told by the Goddesses of Social Work community members, past and present, as they make their way toward clinical licensure.
Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. On today's episode, Sonetta Applewhite, LCSW, joins the show. From the bayous of Mississippi, Sonetta Applewhite has assisted many people in their healing process. Her calling was ordained when she was a teenager, and with the guidance of her great-grandparents, her work as a spiritual healer began. Sonetta's perspective of holistic healing is that thoughts and breath are forces of the unseen, therefore spiritual. So we must incorporate the spiritual aspect of our consciousness to gain balance. Sonetta supports her clients with reconnecting with their internal and external natural resources, which encompasses indigenous and Western therapeutic modalities. Now, as a licensed clinical social worker who works with individuals, groups, children, and their families in the greater Atlanta metro area, Sonetta offers a therapeutic format to support the natural healing process. She facilitates group therapy sessions for girls, women, and veterans. Sonetta works with all of her clients from a nourishing therapeutic approach she created entitled Feminine-Based Therapy, which focuses to support the rise of the balance of feminine and masculine principles within the psyche to assist clients with using their internal resources to achieve self-sustainability. With over 15 years of experience, Sonetta is currently servicing clients with PTSD and CPTSD. With combined decades of clinical and spiritual experience, the therapist at Hoodoo Yoga and Therapy Farm takes a holistic approach to mental wellness. Sonetta specializes in intergenerational cycles, ancestral turning, root work, sexual trauma, complex trauma, PTSD, depression, anxiety, stress management, ADHD, grief, and loss, as well as the diagnoses that develop when these issues are not resolved. Welcome to the show, Sonetta. So glad to have you.
Thank you so very much. It's so wonderful to be here.
Wow, Sonetta, what an amazing bio. I have so many questions, but I'm going to just jump right in. I'm curious, what is a therapy farm and where did the name Hoodoo Yoga come from?
Yes, well, the first name of my business was Comedic Yoga Therapy. Yoga has been my love since I was about 13 years old, 12 or 13. I took a yoga class while visiting my father in LA, and I was a cheerleader. So I wanted to be the most flexible cheerleader. And so yoga helped with that. It wasn't until later I found out it had more benefits, but I wanted to have a quote unquote, a Black or African centered yoga certification. And I did Comedic Yoga. And so when I got that certification, I just called my business. I do yoga and I'm a therapist. So, but it was a person who owns the name of Comedic Yoga. So even though I was Comedic Yoga Therapy and I didn't legally have to change it because I wasn't saying only Comedic Yoga, I decided to change it. But before I changed it, I prayed and I was asking the ancestors to guide me to what they wanted me to have. And it was a long process. It was over a year before I got the message. And I was stepping my foot out of my car. And as I was getting out the car, I can feel it fall down into my mind, into my conscious mind, Hoodoo Yoga and Therapy. And I was like, and I told my husband at the time, I was like, oh my God, I got the name of my business. You know, it felt like a little treasure, you know? And then I went through the, okay, how am I going to spell hoodoo? Because I don't want to scare people away who could actually benefit from my services, but not educated about the cultural aspects of hoodoo. And so the indigenous spelling, or, well, I wouldn't say indigenous, but One of the oldest spelling of hoodoo is HUDU. And ironically, in the tradition of yoga, those syllables are chants and it emits a certain frequency. So I love how everything came together. I didn't learn that until later, about the different syllables of HU and DU, who and do. But that's how I got the name. And I didn't get the farm part of hoodoo yoga and therapy farm until after COVID. It came after COVID. That's when I actually bought a little farm. And that's how you get hoodoo yoga and therapy farm.
That is such a beautiful story. And I love how patient you were. Like you knew you wanted to change the name, but you weren't going to just change it to anything. It was and you waited until you got absolutely the right name. That is so beautiful.
I was just saying it was important to me.
So you bought the farm, you said right before COVID or during COVID?
Like at the end of COVID, right
At
after.
the end of COVID. So I'm assuming during the lockdown, there must have been some downloads or insights that must have been coming to you in regards to creating a therapy farm.
Well, I've always so my great grandmother raised me, and she homestead. That wasn't a big thing where I was from in Mississippi. I mean, most people, elderly group, they still can, and they had their farms and gardens and things. So I brought that to Atlanta with me. When I came here, I always had a garden. Depending on where I was, it was smaller or bigger, but I've always had one. That was too important to me. And then during COVID, my income was threatened. And my only source of income, I work for the VA. I do crisis therapy with veterans. And I didn't like how that felt for my only form of income to be threatened because I didn't want to get the shot. And it wasn't that I was against the shot. I just didn't know what it was and needed time. But I thought how powerless that was, that I would be so dependent on one source of income. And I thought about other mothers who were calling me during that time who needed some support and mostly dealing with food for their children. And I didn't want us to be vulnerable like that. So I began to look for a space where I could have, where us and our children would be safe, and we could have just a space where we could grow food and be safe. Those were the two main things that was ringing in my mind.
So beautiful. So beautiful. We're going to go ahead and get into your social work journey because I want to hear more about the therapy farm, but I bet it's going to tie into your social work journey. So I'm not going to get ahead of myself with my questions. I'm just so excited to have you here. So, Sonetta, tell me about your social work journey. When did you begin? How did you find out about social work? What's been your journey thus far?
Well, I decided to be a therapist when I was about maybe sixth grade. I went to a college fair and they asked me, what did I want to be? And I loved how people would always come to my great grandmother and talk to her. And I remember at the time, I think a movie came out called Eve's Bayou. And I wanted to be, I think her aunt name was Moselle. I think that was the aunt name. I wanted to be Moselle. And so when they asked me at the college fair, what you want to be? I said, I'm going to be a therapist. And no, I said, I'm going to be a psychologist. That's what I said. And everybody was like, ooh, like you going to be. Well, I wrote that in my journal as well. Like when I made it home, I wrote it in my journal. I didn't remember that when I got ready to go to college, but I did. I still chose to study psychology in undergrad. After I studied that in undergrad, I was at a crossroads because going to school to do psychology as my master's had a limitation to it that didn't connect me with the people. And I didn't know anything about an LCSW, but the information came across my desk when I was choosing. I went to college at Tennessee State University, that was undergrad. And I was like, am I going to stay here or am I going back to Mississippi? I decided to go back to Mississippi and I chose social work after being educated about I can actually choose a social justice aspect that is clinical. And that's how I chose social work.
Wow, that is such an amazing story. I
Yes.
love that so much. And so you chose social work. You went back home to Mississippi. You chose social work. And but now you're a clinical social worker. So I want to know, what was the journey in between getting that MSW and being where you are now?
It was kind of it was pretty much a straight shot. We have to get our so that during my internship, it was based in Atlanta. And I work at Peachford Behavioral Psychiatric Hospital. And after I finished, I stayed on and I just stayed in Atlanta. I went from Peachford to doing community based therapy. And I loved seeing the people in their environment. And then I learned that, I was doing therapy. I never wanted to go back to school to do anything else. I never wanted a PhD because I've only wanted to do therapy. But then to have my own private practice began to be my goal. And I just was already collecting hours, wasn't even consciously collecting hours, but I had supervision in my first job and the internship, of course, but then the first job and the clinical community-based therapy, everything was about getting your hours. But I didn't know why people was like, oh, one of your hours. I mean, I'm already a therapist, just young, So after a time of accumulating those hours, I decided to go ahead and take the exam and get my license. So the thing that really set it off too was when I moved to Atlanta outside of, internship, I decided to quit my job because my first son needed more of me. Our job demands time. And one of his teachers was like, I believe, this is a big move for you all. You've been working, working. I think he needs you. And I was like, say less. And I decided to quit my job. I'm a saver. I'm a mom, so I save, most of my income. And I quit the job and we decided just to live. And for a whole year, I took off and just connected with him and we had fun. I learned the city of Atlanta with him, but then I could not find a job when I got ready. I was going to give myself 3 months to find a job. Could not find one. So you have a MSW standing in the lines of places to get my rent paid, And one of those places, the man said, you have an MSW? I said, yes. Why are you here? I said, well, I'm not from here. And he said, oh, that's your problem. You don't have a connection to get a job. Because I had applied, but I thought because I have my master's, everybody's going to hire me, No, you don't know nobody. You don't get a job. And the man made one call. One call. And I had a job the very next day. Like literally, and the job changed my practice because I've always done therapy at that point, but I incorporated, that's when I found out too that yoga was more than for flexibility. I was really sad and very down. I had a dream that told me to start back practicing yoga, and yoga helped to subside the sadness that I was feeling. And my first job after that situation was at a substance abuse facility for women. I wrote my first book at that facility. Yeah, it's called Birthing Self-Love. And it's on Amazon. But Birthing Self-Love was a book about the practical use of using our energy centers, chakras, our energy centers, how you could use them to elevate your life. And I began to share that information with the women and share the yoga practice with the women I was serving in that substance abuse facility for women. And that is the social work journey from that's how the yoga aspect came into play. Then in the community aspect, I begin to teach the children and their parents meditation and some yoga poses. And that's how yoga continued to integrate into my therapeutic practice. I decided to get a, I took this course for meditation. Is a meditation course. I decided to take that course and it elevated my knowledge about the mind and the way the mind works, way beyond theory-based psychology, which is what we learn in school. And so those things began to become integrated into my practice, especially when I was working in the homes and I could see what the family were doing, what they were eating. It was a wonderful, thriving process.
Wow. Oh my goodness, Sonetta. I'm going to back up a little bit. I'm going to back all the way up to your sixth grade I am statement. When they asked you what you were going to be, I love it. Even felt like it came from your solar plexus chakra. You said, I am. And you wrote it down, forgot about it. And then here you are, an LCSW. I'm going to get to my other favorite part of your journey, but can we just sit in that energy for a second about how powerful I am statements are?
Yes, they are powerful. I didn't know that in the sixth grade, though. I said what I know I'm going to be, but I didn't know that and affirmations are a staple even to today, but yes, they are powerful.
And then you wrote it in your journal, because I believe in Habakkuk 2, 2, and 3, write the vision down and make it plain. Everybody who knows me knows I talk about that all the time. And then you wrote in your, and I'm wondering, being raised by your great grandparents, did having I am statements and then knowing to write it down, did it have something to do with the fact that you were raised by your elders?
No, because I had my maternal and paternal great grandparents. They were born in 1901, 1917, 1913. They one in 1913, she could read and write. The ones that were 1901 did not read and write. So, but they were very happy when I learned. I remember being in the first grade and I began to read and write and they were very happy. But they still, all of them still own their own land, still own their own homes, not through a mortgage. They own their place. So I don't know where that came from. I'm trying to reflect. I never thought about that before. But spirit has always walked with me and talked with me. I've always had that connection. In my hometown, I began to do readings at the age of 12. So I think it was just instinctive.
So beautiful, so beautiful. This is my favorite part, and I'm so glad we're jumping into it. You had the dream to begin your own practice of yoga again. And we talked about this. Some of the stuff that I bring into my practice is because it's what saved my life. And now here you are, knowing that it helped alleviate, diminish, dissipate, whatever words, the sadness and the low energy you were experiencing, and then you bring it into your therapeutic practice. The first question I have, Sonetta, is, and I've worked in substance abuse, so I think I kind of know the answer, but because of how we were raised up in the social work profession, that's just not something, those two things don't go together oftentimes. We didn't learn it with the textbooks in our MSW program. If you go to some of these licensing conferences, it's often frowned upon, but it sounded like you did it so effortlessly. So curious about what was the agency organization's response to you bringing that in, and how did you know to effortlessly bring that into the community? Is that okay?
That's great. Well, the only way I knew to bring it in was when I saw the level of stress. The women were arguing and fighting. They were triggering each other, high agitation. And when I saw that behavior, I knew instantly that yoga would help. And I did have to change the language because the owner of the nonprofit is she's a Christian woman, and but she was a New Yorker. She wasn't a Southerner. Like even right now, like my grandmother is a preacher, and she practiced yoga with me when I was 12 years old. But baby, now she's like, oh, that was when I was a sinner. You know, she don't practice yoga no more. She was a sinner back then. So, but I didn't know what other people thought about yoga. It didn't, that never even occurred to me. It was, this is my client. Is my client receptive to this practice? So it began in teaching the breath work. You know, it began with teaching poses that reroute the nervous system and oxygenates the blood. And when I talked about the chakras, I talked about it in essence of your lower spine. This is your root. You know, and I didn't say chakras, I said energy center. And in the book, you know, that's the word, my wording. It is an energy center. In this energy center, you have these organs, and these organs hold this property for you to feel safe and secure. And most of the women that I met had endured some level of trauma. And the main thing for anyone with trauma is to feel safe, because connecting is very difficult if you're not feeling safe. So I never thought about what anyone else thought about it other than the client. But when she saw that it was effective, which was the report of like the people who are in the residential facilities with the women, when she saw that they were no longer fighting, and they didn't, the group wasn't a mandatory group. It was something that they choose to come to, and they were choosing to come. So it was really great.
If we can listen more to how our clients respond to the practices that we bring in that aren't textbook, oh, how far can we go? Sunetta, I'm curious. Okay, so you got your first job as in Atlanta as an MSW. I'm going to come back to connection. And then, so you're doing this work as an MSW, you have your supervised hours. And so one of the things I enjoy talking about on this podcast is because brown and black women in the South are struggling to take that clinical exam. For instance, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, the pass rate is less than 40%, like in the 30s. And so I'm curious, what was your licensing, your clinical license experience like?
Well, I studied. Well, okay. So I was a single mom, so I could not study for the exam, like textbook study. But when I met someone and we got engaged and we got married, I asked him if I could take off to study. And he was like, of course, you know? And so I took 6 months to study, and I failed the exam by 1 point. And I felt really bad, you know? But I got back on the train. I got back on the train real quick too. I was like, okay, when those little months up, I'm coming back, because it was only 1 point, you know? And so I started doing travel and social work. In the meantime, I never went back to working a regular 9 to 5. And so I fell again by 1 point. And then I was like, no, something's not right, you know? And what wasn't right is I did not know how to take the test. So someone told me about the Therapist Development Center. And I think as African American women, we might doubt our intelligence. I don't think it's an intelligent to regurgitate information. And we can do that very well. You know what I'm saying? Because that's all the exam is, a regurgitation of information. But knowing how to regurgitate that information is a whole nother level. And I paid $500 for four sentences. The program had everything that I already knew. I already knew the theories. I knew my medications. I knew the information, but I didn't understand how they would ask it. And the very first page breaks down how to take the test. The test will be asking you questions in the category of ethics, development, or, you know, two other sections. I didn't I didn't, it never occurred to me that because I would be taking the exam, right? And I could say A, B, and C are actually the right answer for this test. They are the right answer. But I needed to know the keywords that let me know which one was for this specific thing. Which one was it? Is it so? Is this asking from an ethical perspective? Is it asking from a developmental perspective? And that's what I did not know. But girl, let me tell you, after I studied that thing, I went back to take that test and I was done in less than 35 minutes. Let me tell you, I didn't even know that I was done with the test, right? I'm sitting up there, my computer shut down. And I'm like, oh no, I'm on a roll. This computer breaking down. I'm raising my hand, like, what's happening? And the lady came in, she said, congratulations, you passed your test. And I was like, what? Now, I've been sitting in here for the whole however long they were giving us for the other two times. I sat there and I was probably one of the last people to leave trying to make sure I'm answering it right. And I sat there for less than, oh, maybe 35, no more, no, not even an hour. And I passed the exam because I had the right information. And that's what we don't know. Therapist Development Center, they cost, like I said, I think it was about $500. It's the best $500 that I could have spent. Because it was, and it didn't, I didn't need the information. I just needed that one page that told me how to take the test.
That's what I talk to people about all the time. It's because I used to teach and now I supervise social workers to clinical license. And these are some of the most brilliant women I have ever met. They know the information. They just need to know how to take the test. And so I've never, ever heard anyone take that test in less than an hour. That is
It's only thanks to that therapist development. They know their stuff. And I even had one of my professors at Jackson State for grad school. She was on the board of making sure the test was, let's see, culturally competent, a culturally competent aspect to the test. And, she would give us insight, but it didn't prepare me for like this did. She and maybe she couldn't even articulate that, but these people at Therapist Development Center had that 411
Wow, I love it. I
on
love
four
it.
sentences on one page.
Shout out to TDC. Shout out. That is amazing. Now all the people are going to go buy
Yeah,
it.
I just
That
like
is good.
it works.
Yes. Now you're an LCSW. Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah.
And here you have been incorporating what I'm just going to call spiritual practices, even if we change the wording within these organizations. Like, can we stop for a second? What, you were a travel social worker as an MSW. Can we have a moment with that? Because a lot of people think you have to get licensed or whatever to be a travel social worker, but you were able to get travel contracts on your MSW.
Before COVID, I mean, it was the plug too. I traveled and I remember, I mean, it was a really great. I remember the first check was $1,000 a day. And me and the other social workers, we looked at each other like, okay, first of all, we went to work that day and we like, these people are not gonna pay us, right? We're in LA. And we're like, okay, they're not gonna pay us. And we got the check and we said, okay, we got the check because they pay you every day that you come. We got the check and we was like, let's hurry up and put it in the account and see if it and it actually, it worked out. I did that for several. I did it until COVID, like the year that COVID happened. April of that year was my last time doing it. So I had my L by then, and I got paid more, of course, because I had the L. But yeah, it was the best ex it was a really great experience.
I love that. And I like talking about that because I want, obviously I'm a clinical social worker, you're a clinical social worker, and I'm in a lot of spaces where people just push the clinical license. And I do believe it's important. And I think it definitely has changed my life. And we can see if it's changed yours. But there's so much value in the MSW. that you can do so many things and have such great experiences and get paid well with that MSW. And I don't think we talk enough about that.
Yeah, and it is important. Social workers, we do a lot, and sometimes it isn't as valued, but we have to begin to change that narrative. I was invited to speak for the Domestic Workers of Atlanta, and what I was sharing is how even being a domestic worker is undervalued, but it is at the foundation of what everyone needs in order to be nurtured to become the professionals that we are. Or for the parents who hire domestic workers, they need that on their foundation, because if you don't have anybody to keep your children, baby, you're not really going far, So in that same essence, a social worker is at the foundation of someone who is getting ready for change. You support that change, and there should be, we looked at each other and said we should get paid $1,000 a day for what we do. Like, that's like, if not more, because we are doing the work. We're giving more than 1,000% in our effort. And then we add the clinical, what is valued by many, or the medical model, the clinical aspect of what we bring to the table, in addition to the humanistic approach, to know about the person in the environment, it is invaluable.
You better preach. Oh my goodness. You better, yes, it is. Then, Happy Social Work Month, by the way.
Thank
And
you.
yes, and the NASW, the theme this year surrounds empowering social workers to speak up about salary, asking for more. We deserve more pay for the work that we do. But I think it starts, obviously, the NASW is our largest national organization, but it starts with each one of us at our personal jobs saying, one, not taking what I like to call pimping the profession, not taking these lower paying jobs, and or if you already are in a lower paying job, asking for more when you get your performance evaluations, saying, this is what I bring to the table. I know that you are getting reimbursed for this. How can I get reimbursed for more? Not going above and beyond what your job duties and responsibilities say,
Please
unless you get monetary compensation, right? And so, you just saying, yes, we deserve to get paid $1,000 a day, bottom line, period.
At a minimum,
Yes, absolutely.
And private practice over time helps to open up that. But even with the insurance companies, I'm on seven insurance board, they don't want to pay the value for the service,
I know.
So advocating for that is necessary.
And so
And
that is how we do micro and macro work,
macro.
even in private practice. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, and setting healthy boundaries, professional. We have to set them with clients, but even on that macro level, I've been servicing your client this year for this whole full year. We want to see if you can up that amount that you're paying. So yeah,
Absolutely.
it's necessary.
Yes. Speak up. Speak up, social workers. Speak up. So now you're an LCSW. And, there's a story in my head recently of someone who I don't know her personally, but she got her clinical. And before, she was really enjoying incorporating her spiritual practices with clients. But then she got her clinical and she shifted. Something in her shifted. But here you are now, you have a therapy farm. You are hoodoo yoga and therapy farm. And it's like you were doing it within the organizations, and now you are boldly, boldly doing this practice with your clients. How did that, the only word that's coming to me, manifest for you? Because there is a fear like, oh, I'm not going to lose my license because, a social worker recently said, we are still being taught in a world to do social work in a world that no longer exists.
I don't know how they see social work. I see social work. I mean, I'm from 10 minutes where Fannie Lou Hamer was born, my family, my uncle was like the first civil rights lawyer, Carver Randall, from where I'm from. So my bloodline is a little different, and how I see social work is very different. It is I am working for the people. I work now with the VA. I work for veterans. I don't work for the VA. I work for veterans. You know what I'm saying? So my perspective of who's holding the throne is very different. You know, I never even thought about these types of questions when incorporating healing modalities into the practice, as well as there's research based on the benefits of breath work. There's research on the benefit of, especially in trauma work, you know, even like within the VA, they're incorporating sound therapy. They're incorporating chiropractic work, you know, energy work. They are incorporating this in the practice because the finding based on research, it is effective, you know? So we can sit here and try to pull out your teeth and get you to talk to me. Or let's try some breath work. Where do you feel the tension in your body? Let's first connect, have them to connect with just being in the seat before you get to hammering in. So how's your day? And what is this? You know, most people are overstimulated. To introduce them into a new environment by acknowledging, hey, you probably had a taxing day. Let's do a meditation to bring all of our concerns in this room instead of you thinking, when I leave here, I got to go home to cook for my kids. I got to get through this traffic. I got to, let's be right here. So I think when building a rapport with our clients, no one can tell you how to do that. And girl, this sister, it's a sister. I don't know her name. She has this book, Decolonizing Therapy. Girl. Yes, that's it. You got it. So this beautiful being, oh yes, and Dr. Joyce DeGruy, you know she's on point. Okay, so Decolonizing Therapy, Jennifer Mellon, Mullan. She's a Psy-D major. That book is amazing, you know. But this young lady, and she talks about the need. We are indigenous people and we crave a real connection. White people, black people, we crave a real connection. And our therapeutic model have some very Carl Jung that he was able to reach into the unconscious. It was very unconventional and still is now, you know. But if the model connects with the client and help them to cope with being in an unnatural situation, then we should do what we have to do to be to really support them. But I never even thought about what anyone else thought about it other than my client.
I love that. Always bringing it back to what's working for the client, right? Yeah. I am actually reading it, and I'm going to tell the audience what the name is. The Pain We Carry, Healing from Complex PTSD for People of Color by Natalie Gutierrez, and The Forts by Jennifer Mullen, Psy-D. This is an amazing book, and it comes with free meditations so that you could be, because I'll often tell my social workers, I don't tell my clients nothing I don't do myself, so
That's
that you
right.
could go ahead and do the meditations and learn as you are sharing the complex PTSD for people and helping them heal from just living in this nation. And then the other book that we were just speaking of is Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome by Dr. Joy DeGruy. Oh my goodness.
I read that book when I was in undergrad. I had a professor, my paper in undergrad. I don't know if you remember. Did you do psychology undergrad or social work?
I did social work, yeah.
Okay. Did y'all have to write a paper before you graduated at the end of the year?
That was 24 years
Oh, yeah.
ago.
I graduated from undergrad in 05, and we had to do a paper. And I will never forget because I almost had got traumatized. The name of my paper was The Acculturation of the Effects of Acculturation on the African American Psyche. I had a professor that hated that paper. I mean, and he was a black man, but he hated it. All of my white professors loved it, thought it was some great research, but Joyce DeGruy book explain like real clear the how acculturation affected us psychologically, and just that integration into another culture and kind of leaving ours behind. But that book that post-traumatic syndrome, SAVE syndrome, really did help me in my paper. And I can see how the Miss Mullen, PsyD major, was it Jennifer, how her book, Decolonizing Therapy, how she was able to get some of her research from that book and just build on it. It is an amazing book. And a young lady is actually doing, she's a social worker. She's doing a book club, the Social Alliance. She's doing a book club on the book.
You know what? I spoke wrong. You are talking about Jennifer Mullen's book Decolonize, and she wrote the foreword for the book that The Pain We Carry. So we're talking about two different books, but read them all. The
Yes.
CSWE says that as social workers, we are to be lifelong learners. Sometimes I think when I'm reading these books and I'm speaking to what I call brown sugars about it, it's almost like I feel like we're talking to the choir, like, yeah. We know we're experiencing it. And I just want to express all social workers should read how brown and black bodies are experiencing complex PTSD in this nation. And these books, the one you spoke of and these two, absolutely do an amazing job of enlightening and help, and not only just enlightening, but then giving practical techniques to help move us through those traumas. So thank you for bringing those up. Oh,
Welcome.
I am so enjoying this conversation, but I'm gonna go to the next question,
Okay.
which is about community. And I love looking at your Facebook page. And we'll make sure that we have the links to your books, to your Facebook, whatever you want on underneath the podcast description so people can find you. But one of the reasons I want to do this podcast was because during the pandemic and as a solo practitioner, I was just super isolated. And I remembered how important social work community was. So I always ask people, what social work communities do you belong to? And or what communities have you created? And what have you learned about yourself by being in these communities?
Yes, thank you. I am not a part of any social work community in Atlanta at this time. I did join the Black Social Workers of Atlanta. I joined them for a couple of years. We were in a process of trying to get things up and going, and so I did not continue after COVID. So I'm not a part of a social work community. And at this time, I can't say that I'm a part of any community. I'm open to being a part of a community and learning more. I want to be a part of a community. Let me say that. I do integrate farming in the yoga. So I communicate with other organizations about that, and I add the therapeutic aspect as I learn the farming techniques that I incorporate here on the land. And there is a communal aspect. I market through social media, and I'm getting back out into the streets, and like, because I'm a very personable person. So I like the face-to-face, shake your hand and here's my flyer type of vibe. COVID kind of took that away from us. And so getting back open to that aspect of marketing to connect with people. So the community that comes here, there's different people every month. Every fourth Saturday, we do a bonfire and we do mental health. It's 4 hour mental and emotional well-being. And you don't have to have a mental health diagnosis to come. I mean, we're tapped into working and running here and running there. It creates a certain unnatural anxiety in all of us because we're so busy. So this is a self-care moment to just retreat and dissolve into ourselves. So we come, we do the bonfire. We also offer, I offer a tree bathing meditation in which we breathe and connect to the trees. It's another book that I wrote, Are Trees God's Hand? That's a children book, but it's Are Trees God's Hand? So we connect with the trees and we inhale And imagine, because that's a very reciprocal relationship that we have with nature. We give nature what it needs, the carbon dioxide. It gives us oxygen. And in that way, even with the teenagers, they learn that that's how your relationships should be. The give and take, the reciprocity of a relationship shouldn't, you shouldn't have to ask, because what is truly needed is given effortlessly. So we do a meditation with the trees. Different people share. I sing different songs, indigenous songs. Part of my ethnicity is Choctaw from that region of Mississippi. And of course, I'm Black, I'm African. So I share the spiritual songs that I have learned and that resonate with different aspects of nature. So a part of my land at the back part is a forest. What energy is in the forest and do you resonate with it? And we sing a song for the water, you know? So we bring those different aspects, and I sing in the traditional tongue, not in English. So some songs are in Yoruba, some chants are in Choctaw, some are in the tree language from Ghana. So I do different ones.
Oh my goodness. How beautiful is that? And I was going to tell you, I found you because I was looking for social workers who do yoga and breath work. And so I want to say that you do have a community of social workers who are following you just because you have social work in your title on your Facebook page, who do social work, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But how beautiful is that, that you have these folks coming into your land, onto your land, and doing that energy work with them? Yeah, that is
Good
amazing.
experience. I did, for the first time, I did Eventbrite. Every Black History Month for the last past 4 years, we do the Black Tea and Poetry, Black Love Tea and Poetry set. And this year, I did Eventbrite. I had some young Black minds. I mean, these young men and women, they were young, 25, 24, 23 years old, and their perspective on life is so different. But they was like, well, you were having tea and you was doing poetry. And we was like, yeah, we wanted to come. And it was such a difference. So it was more than, I have some people who come every month, but it was also this young group, they brought a whole different aspect to it. It was really great. I never know who's going to come. I do trust that, the people who do come have a great vibe, and these young people had an amazing energy. It was really great. And
And
thank you.
I love the because I've used this analogy a lot, that if you build the bonfire, whatever that thing is you're passionate about, if you build that bonfire, the people who are looking for warmth from you will come. And you are literally doing that. Oh, I cannot wait to come. I'm excited now that because I didn't know where you were doing those events, but now that I know, it's going to be easy to get there. So I cannot wait
You
to be around your bonfire. Oh, that's so exciting.
are. Yes,
Oh,
ma'am.
let me move on. Okay. So what is one belief about social work that you started on this journey with that you feel has changed the most?
Well, in the beginning, social work was seen like, the people who go to people's homes and take their children. And I don't know about that kind of social work because I did a clinical-based social work, and most people don't know what that is. They like, okay, clinical. So what? You take the children out and you take them to a clinic. And I said, no, those are two different kinds of types of social worker. I wouldn't know how to take a child out of their home. I don't know about that process, and it's not in alignment with my nature either, and no shade to the social workers who do that. They have a very deep internal strength to do that type of work, because it's not like they want to, they doing not and they're not doing it just because their jobs. It's sometimes it's very deep safety issues. But that is one thing that changed, that social workers are, it is so vast, the opportunities from forensic social work to ones who are lobbying and legislation. So that is one thing that changed because I thought that social work was only one thing. And actually, we're in every aspect of our society, merging our society together in a very healthy way, or helping and integrate in a very healthy way, helping others integrate in a healthy way. So that is one thing that has changed.
I love that. And you spoke about social work being foundational for society. And I saw this image of oftentimes when people walk into a beautiful home, they don't notice the foundation. And so sometimes that is why we're not seen and acknowledged for just really how fundamental we are, because we are the foundation of society. I'm curious, Annetta. When folks are coming out to your farm and they know you as hoodoo yoga, and you tell them if the conversation comes up that you're a social worker, what has been the reaction from folks?
I never got a reaction. I think I call myself the yoga social worker too. And I never got a reaction. Everyone knows that I do therapy. If they come here, they know that that is everything that we're doing is to nurture the nervous system. Everything that I do is for that aspect because I think we're overstimulated most of the time in our culture. So I never had anyone say, "Oh, you're a social worker," or it never happened to me.
I love that. And if they do have a preconceived notion of what social work is, you're changing the narrative automatically with the work that you do. Oh,
I
thank
hope
you too, by the way, by change by for the work that you do. It feels like it's so needed. Absolutely so needed. So thank you for doing what you do. I cannot believe we are already at our last question. This has been such an amazing conversation. And one of the things that I got from this is that from the beginning, sixth grade, you intended to do what you love, and you didn't even pay attention to what anybody else may have said and or thought about what it was. If it resonated with you and it resonated with your clients, you were going to do that work. And that's such a beautiful testimony. What advice would you give to social workers who may be hesitant about stepping into doing what they love within this field of social work?
You said a word earlier when you did a prayer and you mentioned medicine. It is my belief and the belief of my family that all of us come here with a certain medicine. And that means that we emit something that no one else has, the essence of who we are. And integrating the essence of who we are, it reminds me of WED when he talked about the double consciousness. We have to integrate our authentic selves within the European educational self. And the authentic self, it goes beyond color, race, gender. It goes beyond those boundaries. The authentic self is It will res whatever you have, your medicine is, will resonate with the people who came here for what you have to offer. And that is the protection that you have as well. As you give it, that is also protecting you, And that's just the way I was raised. If you do what you're supposed to be doing, you will be protected. I think Dr. King probably moved in that way too. He wasn't doing what preachers usually do, but that work protected him, doing it, and it has to be done. So that is really my advice, or what I would like to share with any other social workers who are just finishing school or just got your license, been licensed now since 2018. If it doesn't matter where you are on that journey, knowing that you care so much about people that you want to nurture them from out of their current situation to a different situation, that is sacred. It's a very sacred duty to choose to share your life essence with someone to help them to get to the next level. And if that is in pure essence of medicine, you know, so we have a duty to share that medicine and incorporate the Western perspective as we do it.
Oh my gosh, I could sit here and listen to you all night. Ah, that was absolutely beautiful. The work that we do is sacred. And if you're doing it and you're doing what you've been called here to do, you are protected. So beautiful. Sunetta, thank you so much for coming on to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. This has been such an honor and so cup filling for me. And I cannot wait to come and visit you on your land.
Thank you so much for having me. And I love your questions. Those are very thought-provoking questions. I appreciate you for inviting me. And like I said, you know, some people be like, yeah, you can come anytime. I really do mean it. We're going into our growing season. So, you know, you'll see.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. We are glad you were here. If you liked this episode, please come back to hear more stories of the journeys through social work, and please leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. See you next time here on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast.